This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. I'm Pete, and I'm with Johnny, man. Johnny, how's it going?
Pretty good. At my work, we just totally renovated the company and started a and changed the routing. And after 3.5 years, I don't have to drive this big truck into downtown Boulder and crawl around in a bunch of these restaurants anymore. Hallelujah.
Good news, then, I'm guessing.
That's very good news. It's like, you know, they're always a challenge. Even the fanciest of restaurants, these kitchens are, it can be a challenge. Oh, yeah. And it's just, and timing and trying to crawl around while all these chefs are cooking. It just, you know, and so finally they go, we know what we're getting you, and parking is a nightmare. We're going to rearrange it. I'm going farther north and up into more country areas.
Yeah, when you think about it, restaurants aren't built to have giant kitchens. Or, I mean, they have big kitchens, but they have a lot of staff in those kitchens.
Oh, yeah.
The money's out the tables. That's where if you only have 15 tables, makes it harder. If you have 30 tables, it makes it easier to make more money.
But yeah, my fat ass crawling around underneath stuff, inspecting and stuff. And, you know, it's like everyone did it. I'm like, okay, we got a bunch of new guys. Let them hit those trenches now and let me drive out to the country.
Yeah, let me be Johnny Sorrow.
Yep. But all in all, great mood. And I can't wait to talk about especially our main event because it's awesome.
Awesome, exactly. And they opened up with a new NWA On Demand website. Mm-hmm. So that launched this morning, so we'll see how that goes. It's just in the beginning phases, so I'm sure they'll be working. I'm sure there'll be some bugs. They'll be working on those and cleaning it up and stuff.
And possibly get some of that Smashing Pumpkins money in there, and we can expect. Just wait for it. This is the biggest groaner I've ever told. There's gonna be an emphasis on matches from 1979. Boo them.
Jeez, boo. Yeah.
I couldn't help it.
Jeez, all right. Well, let's get into the footage. And the first match is, let's see here. It's going to be, you know what, let's go with Ivan Putski versus Tank Patton.
Let's.
You know, I've been a downer on Ivan Putski. I mean, we talked about it on Titans of Wrestling. He had that classic... Not even a classic. It's the lost classic that no one ever talks about with Larry Zbyszko, where Putski worked really hard. But he's not a hard worker. He got by on his gimmick. And he's just not a good dynamic worker. But you know what? He has charisma. Mm-hmm. He's charming. And it worked in this match. Because I'm not going in expecting an excellent match or an awesome match. I'm expecting to see some charm from Putski. Tank Patton, again, he's been proven to be a solid hand, not a great dynamic worker by any stretch of the imagination, but a good solid heel. I absolutely loved Ivan dancing to the polka. I thought it was fantastic early on. The shtick was good. I totally loved Tank Patton with the war helmet and camo. I think it worked for the gimmick. You see Patton with the cast, so you got to keep an eye on that. And what does he do right off the bat? He swings and misses. We see a bunch of headlock spots, but they work, and they work because of Putski's charm and his gimmick, and he's making him entertaining. Again, this isn't dynamic work, mind you, but it's working because of his gimmick and you care about his character. I like Patton using the cast for like small jabs in the match. I loved how Putski uses the cast to his advantage in it. We see a big backbreaker by Patton, and again, he does it again. And the cast in the play, working over the back. Like, I actually enjoyed Patton's work on top, where, I mean, he's telling a story, working over Putski's back with the cast and the backbreakers. Pretty much, this is a basic match. I mean, totally basic stuff. But Putski's charm pretty much carries it all the way through. It just shows, if you're over, you don't have to do a whole hell of a lot sometimes and to remain over in 1981. And here he does. I think me and you could go out there and work the same match.
Well.
because it's that basic of a match. But it wouldn't get over because neither of us are Ivan Putski. Sorry, Johnny. I know you have a high opinion of yourself. And there is the Johnny Sorrow followers out there.
Yes. The army.
Where you can do no wrong. Yes. They're all wearing yellow shirts. I was shocked how much enjoyment I got out of this. I mean, it's only at best it's a 2-star match. But it's just something I enjoyed, and it was all because of I liked Ivan Putski, and I liked Patton heel shtick here. What you make of this, man?
Yeah, this is fun enough. It's like we talked about Putski a lot on Titans, and indeed, if anyone can find a way to see it, the lost classic of him and Larry Zbyszko from the Philadelphia Spectrum, you'll blow your mind. It's like, what?
Yeah,
And I've talked about how I had childhood fondness for Ivan Putski, but I admit Ivan Putski stinks. But, but he does something that I really like. It's something Jimmy Valiant did, because Ivan just cheats this whole fucking match. He's punching him in the face and when the ref's not looking, and going, no, it was an open palm. You know, he's doing all kinds of stuff like that, like Jimmy Valiant used to do to jobbers on TBS Saturday night. And the crowd loves it because they don't give a shit. So many people nowadays, a lot of people nowadays I read, they're like, oh, these good guys now, they cheat. Where's the honest, are all of you just people who remember Bob Backlund in the 70s or something? Because good guys have always cheated. You know, but then there's ones who are blatant about it, and that was Ivan and Valiant, because the crowd loves them. And he starts the match, he's about to start the match, and he's like, wait, and he grabs a drink, and he's just putting his hand out of the tank. And Tank's like not rushing him because Ivan's dangerous. And he takes a sip of what I thought was beer because, you know, he's Polish.
Yeah.
and then he, for no reason, throws it in Tank's face, you know, and everyone cheers, yay. And I was like, Ivan's an asshole. But then ice is everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it was a Coke. And Paul Bosch gets off the line. Apparently it got on Paul Bosch and he wasn't that happy about it because he's like, he says, well, now that he's fueled and gave us all a bath, it's like, I'm sorry, Mr. Bosch, I'll pay for your dry. He's fining him for his dry cleaning. you seen my suits? Look at these suits. These aren't cheap. And then he says, anyone who can say Dobra can join the Polish army. And he pauses. He goes, and by that, I don't mean the real Polish army. I mean it as far as Ivan Putski is concerned. Because at first it sounded like a Polish joke that didn't make any sense. And then he clarifies himself. Tank looks in the face like a young Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, I can see that.
and there's a guy in the crowd who I love. He's real loud. And apparently, because Nick Kozak is our referee here, apparently he knows Nick, or he feels he knows Nick, because Tank is using the cast, and this guy yells, hey, he's using that cast, Nick! Nick! It's the second Nick. He's like, he's using the cast, Nick! Nick! Like, he would. I laugh so hard. He's like, Nick, it's me, Bill!
Yeah. Spill from the third row.
You know, me, I'm here every week for 30 years. The motherfucker's using the cast, stupid. Nick! And then, of course, it can't be a Paul Bosch Ivan Putski match without him using a fucking slur that I just don't think he realizes it's a slur, or or it wasn't a slur to him, so he don't give a shit, because he's talking about Ivan trying to get into position for a move. He's like, the Polak is trying to get into position. And it always just makes me go, what the fuck, when he does that.
You know, it's just that it's the time frame, man. I can easily see my grandfather using the term Polak.
Yeah, but always meets me too, but always derogatory. I mean, Archie Bunker started on the air in 1971, you know. Yeah. By this time people knew that Polak was not nice to say.
Right.
I'm not, and I don't think that Paul Bosch totally did not mean it in a mean way. I'm just, so that's what's so fascinating.
And you gotta remember he's in the army, and you know, he was in
Poland. Yeah, you know, I think there's a totally non-hateful reason for it. Yeah. I just, you know, it baffles me. And it always makes me laugh, because the first thing I think of is Meathead.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, the match itself, it was what it was, but the crowd was super hot into it. They loved Ivan.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, it was perfectly fine.
But hey, but we'll go to the next match, and we'll look at Chavo Guerrero and Eddie Mansfield. And I forgot to mention, all these matches are on January 16th, 1981, all from the same show. The only thing they haven't uploaded from that show is the Terry Funk versus Wahoo McDaniel match, which on paper sounds freaking dynamite. Hopefully that'll come sooner than later, or I'll even take it later. Just as long as we get it, because that sounds just freaking incredible. And in 1981, Terry Funk is on fire, mind you.
And think about 81, Wahoo, you know, the younger we see Wahoo, the more awesome he is.
Yeah, because he's the package. He can fight, he can sell, he's more athletic. Yeah, it's a, yeah. What do you think of Chavo and Eddie Mansfield, man?
Well, first of all, I just got to mention again, because I love this guy, is the old announcer, and he's got the best name, Kemper Kaiser.
Yep.
And now up to Kemper Kaiser. I'm like, what an amazing ring announcer name that is.
Isn't it? I think I like it better than Boyd Pierce even.
I know, I do too. Kemper Kaiser. It sounds made up.
Yeah.
But it's perfect. And he's a little flamboyant in his outfit. And he's as old as fucking dirt here. You know, it was soon to see that this dude is the Crypt Keeper, but with a stylish haircut and a nice suit.
Yep.
But he still has a great voice. I love his announcing voice. It's so old school. But apparently Mansfield has a manager of sorts. I think Paul called him a second.
Yeah.
And apparently Walt Disney didn't die and get frozen. He became his second. I looked exactly like Walt Disney in a polo shirt. And I was like, what's his guy? What's his deal? This guy, was he a manager?
I don't know. I've seen him around on the footage, and I just don't know, because he doesn't play any part in the matches whatsoever. I'm just not sure.
Maybe that's his gimmick. He's like, you know, managers nowadays, they're all just going for flashy and loud and getting attention. I'm going to do the exact opposite.
Sure, this guy had no charisma. Wasn't pointed out to him.
Say his name.
No, this is the first time he's been pointed out to us. But I've seen him on the footage, like, actively at ringside before. So I think he might be, I don't know, maybe it was the dude's birthday, and he's normally, like, the ring attendant. I don't know. I really have no explanation for this guy.
He won a contest?
If anyone you guys know, yeah, it's his birthday. He bought a birthday ticket for him. If anyone knows, let us know, because I have no earthly idea.
His name is, like, completely something forgettable. That'd be great. Yeah. The match itself was okay. I mean, we've seen some good Mansfield.
Yeah, he's been kind of like, you know, pretty entertaining, but here I didn't do it for me.
No, he wasn't doing it for me here either, and Chavo was trying his best, but Chavo's just getting up in age a little bit, you know. Here, Chavo's hair, just glorious. And then at one point, Paul calls a move. He's like, oh, he'll feel that all the way up into his sacroiliac. I was like, someone was watching the Flintstones this morning. That's because that's the only other place I've ever heard, you know, my aching sacroiliac. At the end, the timekeeper fucked up with the ringing the bell.
Yeah.
I made a note, and Paul pointed that out, which I always love. He points it out nicely out of respect to his audience. We've right. talked about how he does it. He doesn't pretend mistakes didn't happen. He tries to explain them or just says someone made a mistake, you know, which I love. You know, I love that about him. And he's nice about it on the air, but you know someone got an earful.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you know, it was okay. I always get excited to see Chavo, but I don't know, it wasn't clicking, I didn't think.
Yeah, here's a question for you. Like, in all the tag work Chavo's been in with any of his brothers or whoever he's tagging with, especially the Guerrero brothers, especially Hector, I really have liked him in the tag team setting. On the singles front, he's been kind of hit or miss for me, and I'm not exactly sure. It might be because he has that Japan mentality where he's working. I don't know. He's just not working to the crowd enough sometimes, but I'm not sure. Have you have you found him kind of hit or miss? Because even here you mentioned he's getting older, but it's only 1981.
That's right.
And then the tag team, he was smoking it in 84 and 85 and 86.
That's in a tag, though, as well. Yeah, you know, right. So, but anyway, yeah, you're right. He was younger here. I misspoke. But you mentioned the Japanese thing, and Paul was saying, he's like, he's the recognized junior champion of the world in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, and Paul Bosch is even pointing it out. There's, you know, some, he was working a lot in Japan at that time, apparently. So maybe there's a bit of that. I don't know. I think maybe if we saw him even younger, you know, he'd be even more impressive.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, I hear about great stuff. It was how great he was in L.A., which, you know, there's not a whole lot of footage of that floating around. I mean, I've seen some stuff with Piper. And I enjoyed it.
Right, right.
But I, you know, and he was a huge draw in L.A. at the time. And he was one that, it was like, they always talk about how wacky he was because they put him on top and he had never really been a draw anywhere. And they gave him the chance and him and a small guy on top. People thought it was shocking for the L.A. territory, mm-hmm. which was built around bigger guys before that. And he became an instant star because his style was so different. And he drew Mexicans through the Hispanic crowd and stuff, you know.
To that point, that song we use at the end is from a band called the Mountain Goats, and the leader of the band. The whole album's about wrestling, but mainly Chavo and where he grew up. He was watching that, and he's our age. Or maybe a little older, and he would. It's all about how Chavo Guerrero was his childhood hero.
Yeah.
So I would, if you stuff even like earlier, you know, I would love to see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, the tags are just spectacular. But I don't know. This match is just. I was like, I like both these guys, but nothing's clicking.
Yeah, I was really excited. I'm with you, man. I was real excited. I had really high hopes for this because, I mean, bottom line, Chavo is a stud, and honestly, if he took his what he was doing here into the, he's like one of those guys who you can easily see working the style he does here. He can easily fit in into this modern era right now and be a big star because of his size. He was a good promo. He had charisma, you know.
Well, I'm sorry, to your point, that short little run he had as Chavo Classic.
Yeah.
As an old man, he was over. He was crazy. He was crazy over during that little period.
Yeah, so, I totally agree. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, but you know, but actually being a headliner and working,
oh, right.
is, I mean, it's style. I mean, he reminds you so much of Eddie watching it. You clearly see a lot of Eddie, how much influence or how much respect Eddie had for his brother as a worker, because you see a lot of it. Mm-hmm. A lot of it, you see these spots we always thought were Eddie spots, but man, Chavo was doing them before Eddie. And Mansfield, I thought it's been a lot of fun in the footage, and you see Chavo with his New Japan Pro Wrestling Junior belt. I don't think it was the IWGP belt at the time, but I like Mansfield early on. He's like chewing up the scenery, just stopping and pausing and looking out at the crowd. I thought it was weird, but he was having fun. And you see Mansfield with this giant punch, and he misses right off the bat. And you see Chavo working the leg, and he's still working the leg with a fun knee lock. And Mansell flips Chavo, but he lands on his feet. You know, that's an Eddie spot, but Chavo's doing it here. He then goes back to the leg. Chavo's shine has been pretty solid. You know, he's working the leg, but nothing really dynamic, you know. He's just going and grinding on the leg. But it's not doing great leg work, but it's just you know, hey, look, here's my shine. I'm going to work the leg. Kind of like a day at the office type of thing going, it felt like. You see Chavo with this really cool flying ankle pick, and he's back to working the leg. Chavo with leg kicks. Then he snaps, does one of them, like, snap mirroring the leg and does a toe hold on it. And I like Mansell selling and trying to protect the leg. Mansell finally suckers it in and hits a backbreaker. Eddie tosses Chavo to the floor, and Mansell works him over. Chavo goes into the post, and Mansell's working the arm. And, I mean, I was enjoying the stuff there, and everything they're doing was cool. But, it just wasn't clicking with me. And then he gets kind of sloppy down the stretch. Chavo misses some stuff, and their timing seemed off down the stretch. And overall, kind of disappointing match where I saw the time and I saw both guys. I'm like, oh, man, this could be a really sleeper great match. And it never quite got to that level. but we'll see, you know.
Hey, I can just picture with some of the botches and everything, and if it was Mansfield's fault, and he gets backstage and someone yells, I was like, Mansfield, what do you want to do? Show everyone that it's fake? Hey.
Jeez. There you go.
But, file that one away.
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of funny. I mean, you look at Mansfield, he clearly, I mean, I know he talked about how he was promised the world title. And, I mean, obviously that's not, there's no way this guy's a world title contender.
No way.
But thought he was a very entertaining heel.
He was a continental lover.
Yeah, the continental lover. I dug the gimmick, and I enjoyed him. I've enjoyed him as a worker from what we've seen. And then we get this Nick Bockwinkel promo, and wow, it's just fantastic. He's ripping into Dusty. Paul Bosch wants to get the last word, but Tricky Nicky letting that happen because he's like the consummate professional, consummate pro, plays his character to perfection here. And God, you just hate him. What up? Because he shows up the legendary host and tearing up Texas' favorite son, Dusty Rhodes. What do you think of this, man?
This was awesome. This was one of, I'm not kidding, this is one of the best promos I've ever seen because of where it starts and where it ends up. Because, first of all, Paul Bosch is needling him during the first half of this about being arrogant. He looks like he's getting ready to leave. And he turns around, and after he's done with it, Paul Bosch says, "Thank you, Mr. Champion." And, you know, with, in total respect, because that's what I wanted. You know, that was amazing. And so he's talking about this basically being the AWA champion versus the NWA champion. Because Dusty had just lost the title. And, Bosch is now using the AWA. He explains that Houston, I believe, is now the third largest city in America. So therefore, the AWA title is more prestigious because of where it's defended, the population of the cities. It's great stuff. And then he's like, and really, really, champion versus champion, Mr. Rhodes, I believe you held that title for 3 months, sir. Well, sir, I have been a world champion for the last nine of ten years, be it world champion or world tag team champion, you know. And it's
incredible.
All,
yeah.
He's not full of shit. He's telling truth.
He turned himself into the New York Yankees in that one line, you know.
He's just Boston dropping fucking
Celtics, shit. Everything, yep.
Yeah. It's fucking awesome. And he's like, and sir, I will kick you in the teeth and enjoy it. He says it not yelling. He's saying it matter of factly. And just, this is the truth. This is what I'll do. And he's talking about how great he is. So he's getting ready to leave. And Bosch is like, yeah, it's very arrogant of you. So would you call yourself arrogant? Well, yes. Yes, I believe I am. And I have every right to be arrogant, if that's the word you choose to use, sir. And then he drops into a side profile.
Yeah.
And it's like he's looking up at the sky, the camera starts shooting up and like and over Bosch's shoulder. And he's like, because I am the greatest at what I do. You know, and then he goes doing the whole, what does The word on the marquee is wrestling, sir, and I am the world's greatest wrestler. You know, and that's always his shtick, and this is the best one I've ever heard. He's looking up into the heavens like he knows he's the best in the goddamn world at this, and he ain't taking no shit from nobody, and if he wants to be arrogant, he has every right to be fucking arrogant, and he is done, and, just, and he goes, and with that, I'm going to like bid you adieu, and yeah. And Paul Bosch goes, thank you, Mr. Champion. You know, just he turned him. And, you've got to see this. I knew you were going to flip for this. After I got done watching this, I was like, dude, I know Pete's probably flipping for this as much as I am.
I am. It was freaking incredible. I was like, wow. And mind you, the service put this promo up against a Terry Funk promo. And I thought this smoked Terry's promo.
It's what I said. This smokes 90% of all promos ever, yeah. In my estimation. This is not a case of, well, you just saw it and you were high. It doesn't matter. This is something else. This is when we see something special, they go, holy shit, dude. This is something everyone. This is. Needs to be seen along with Hard Times and anything else. This is awesome.
Yeah, of all the promos, when we did Titans, the only thing I think could even stand up to this is the Bruno Empty Arena or one of the other Bruno promos.
This encapsulates everything Nick Bockwinkel is about. If yep. you want to know, if you have never seen Nick Bockwinkel before, and you want to know what is his character, basically, what is it about this guy? This promo, you walk away, you know everything you need to know about this guy. It's amazing.
It truly is. It's I can't put over the promo enough. And man, on that note, we're gonna take a break, let you settle in on that, and like wish you if you haven't seen it, look it up, find it. It's definitely on NWAOnDemand.com.
It's the only place you can find it, yeah, is on NWA On Demand.
Pretty sure, and it's incredible. On that note, though, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and we're back, and we're going to look at Black Gordman versus Relapongo Leon. Again, we're looking at January 16th, 1981. You know, Black Gordman and Goliath were a big drawing tag team, and were big throughout. Leon has always been kind of like an underneath guy, but it's someone I've kind of liked as an underneath guy, And Gordman's pretty good, but here he's getting up there in age. And he kind of reminds me a little bit of El Santanico, but Santanico was still had a lot more spry. But Gordman kind of had that type of vibe about him, kind of charisma about him, like he's just evil. And I enjoyed this match. It wasn't a blow away. I think it was like 8 minutes. But what we got was a fun little, a very Lucha-influenced match. See Leon with this nice Lucha arm drag to start, and you get a little back and forth. And Gorman's a full Rudo, and he does these great little comeback cutoffs. And it was just a maestro of controlling the crowd and real good at cutting off and how to get heat on Leon. And I thought Gorman, when he needed to, was really good at feeding Leon. I thought his cutoffs were just like pinpoint on time, just the timing here that he has. And just 7 years in the business, just you just tell him versus some guy, younger guy, on how to do these great cutoffs in like in an 8 minute match. And overall, this was a really good, solid underneath match. I mean, nothing, you know, they're definitely not reinventing the wheel or all time classic, but it was just two good workers getting not a whole lot of time to tell a story, and I thought they did a good job with the time allotted. What you make of it, Johnny?
Yeah, I was. It was okay. Relampago really got the crowd behind him. but I wrote that it was kind of like watching if Lucha was karate. I think Relampago is what, like a green belt, and Gorman is definitely a black belt, but he's been a black belt a long, long time.
Yeah.
But he's still a green belt at Lucha. It's what this felt like, because Relampago was doing what I just called it basic Lucha. Just very basic Lucha Libre, and Gorman's doing, I'm an old man who's been doing this forever, Lucha. Yeah. You know, and he's good at it. And that was just it. Every time he swatted away a drop kick or ducked out of the way right in time, just to kill his heat.
Yeah.
You know, to build the crowd up.
Timing was impeccable.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Timing was great on all that shit. You know, so he knows what he's doing in that ring and how to work the crowd up. And Relampago was doing his best to be a fiery young Lucha babyface at his skill level. Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things I found a more interesting approaching. I rarely watch wrestling that way, you know, but this is one of the ones where if I didn't, I think I'd be a little bored.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, look at this. Oh, I was like, the timing on that. You know, that's something to spot. That's why I was laughing, because that was my point too. When you brought up the timing, I was like, the timing was something to talk about here.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. So if you watch enough wrestling, you start to pick up on timing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And here, you definitely see it. I mean, like Black Gorman's body is pretty much shot. He has a little pot belly. He just doesn't have a whole lot going for him.
Doesn't have a lot going for him. Did you see that man's hair?
Okay, the hair. You're right. Yeah. Definitely glorious hair.
That glorious man. If he had ever worn a mask, the best thing in the world that he had it taken away from him. Because why would you hide a mane of hair that luxurious and gorgeous? He may be pug ugly, but his hair is dreamy.
And by not having like over him, I'm also saying it's just over his athletic prime, you know. So he had to rely on his brain, kind of like Jake used to do. And this is very, it was similar to a Jake Snake in a way. It was a lot of psychology and a lot of crowd psychology and a lot of great timing and stuff. You don't ever lose when you wrestle. And that's what he had here, man. It was really interesting. Next up, we're going to look at the Billy Robinson versus Dory Funk Jr. match. So, Johnny, what were your thoughts here, man?
I have so much I need to say about this, but wait, hold on a second. I'll be right there. I didn't watch it. Basically, I was trying to squeeze everything in real quick last night, and I had a very small time frame, and I got through everything, and then I got to that, and I was like, well, it's either that or, you know, this other thing that I wanted to watch more. And I'm like, Dory Funk, Billy Robinson, huh? How long is it? I checked the length. I'm like, it's 25 minutes. I'm going to tap out on this one. Maybe I'll go back. I enjoy Billy Robinson against the right guy, and I'm just not a big Dory guy, and I was just like, I can't do it. But so
fair
please
enough.
Take it away.
I
you know
it.
Me.
Yeah. I knew this would be a tough one for you.
I got my due diligence. I watch everything, but come on. When you're going to give me, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get some grappling between Billy Robinson and Dory. So not my cup of tea, exactly. I'm not going to sit here and say it stinks because it doesn't. It's not my cup of tea.
Yeah, Johnny's not. You've well documented you're not a headlock type of guy.
I can be.
But you don't like the fake simulated wrestling, fighting.
And,
I get it.
And I'm sorry. I realize how incredibly talented Dory Funk Jr. is. But I find him boring. That's just it. I'm not shitting on him. I think he's an amazing wrestler who I just don't care.
I think one thing you would have enjoyed watching this was hearing Bosch's commentary, because it actually sounded a lot like a lot of Parv's talking points about Dory Funk Jr. And it was like,
really?
Like he's referring to about Dory not having any facials and was explaining why, and same shit. We always thought Parv would bullshit us and try to explain but it sounds a lot more credible coming out of Bosch's mouth than Parv's crap that he used to spew at times. And
okay, well, I tell you what, you know what? You sold me. When I'm just relaxing this weekend, I'll kick back and give it a try, because that sounds really funny.
Because he does a lot of that. I talked about ring positioning and stuff like Barb would always hammer on about Dory Funk matches that none of the rest of us saw. I remember Barb's last public Dory Funk review was against Bockwinkel at the Slamboree match, and it was like he was making up stuff like Paul Bosch is talking about getting like, okay, Parv. And he's the only one I've ever seen rank it. I think almost 4 stars that match with Slamboree, which is not a very good match. A very boring, dry numb match. But this one, I enjoyed. I love when Billy cranking Dory with like this leverage move. Dory with this leverage move, like a headlock, but he's lifting him over his shoulder type of thing. And then Dory trying to tie him up, but Billy does one of those like European carny escapes that I love that Billy's so famous for. At the end, he does like a snapmare to Dory's leg, and then Dory's like having a pose off, and Billy just just slaps the freaking taste right out of Dory's mouth, and the crowd is like, whoa. And I gotta admit, the crowd really was not going, I mean, these guys are working the mat, and the crowd just was not into it all that much. But damn, they reacted to that freaking slap, because it felt like almost like he took his glove off and wanted revenge or wanted respect.
That's because all the fucking Texans were like, finally someone fucking hit someone.
Yeah, exactly. And then after the crowd reacts, Billy goes and starts working the arm. But Dory throws an elbow, and Billy takes a huge, gigantic bump to the outside over the top rope. And Billy is pissed. And Dory sees he's pissed, so he takes a powder. He bails out of the ring and trying to get Billy not so pissed off. He comes back, and we get a Billy Robinson backbreaker getting 2. We see Billy throwing some European forearms that really rock Dory. Another backbreaker gets 2. And now Billy's focusing on the back and hooks on a surfboard. From the surfboard, Billy transitions to put his knee to Dory's back, really going after that back really well. I loved Robinson did this trap pin attempt on Dory, which was just beautiful. Dory hits a forearm shiver, and now Dory's hitting Robinson with stiff-looking European forearms. Like this breaking down, you're like, damn, these guys are knocking the shit out of each other. Robinson is reeling. We jump like to the final 5 minutes. Not a cut, but it's just like, same type of stuff. And we jump to the final 5 minutes, and Dory is just rocking Billy with European forearms. Just like, they're like cement truck hard hitting. And Robinson with a jumping punch. Big neck breaker gets 2. Billy eats another one of them freaking Dory Funk forearms, but counters into an abdominal stretch. Robinson backbreaker causes Billy's knee to give out, which I enjoyed here because Dory did a little legwork and that set it up. And what we end up was with a draw. There's a lot of like at this. At times, I could see people saying it was boring. I thought Dory looked good, and Dory at times. I thought Billy looked good, and I thought at times Dory looked good. Overall, 3-star match. Good, solid stuff. Kind of what you expect out of them, because they're not like in their 1970s prime. This is towards the end of Billy actually like really wrestling, and Dory is kind of like, you know, they're not in their prime, but they're still good workers. And they know how to tell an engaging story while working the mat and all that stuff. But it's worth checking out. And Bosch was really good to explain the psychology of the moves and why they're doing it. And Paul Bosch is just a master at, you know, bullshitting on the microphone. And good here.
Oh, totally. But I was just about to ask you before you wrap it up. Was Bosch also like, you know, obviously really enjoying this? Because no. It sounds like it'd be right up his alley.
Not really. He was enjoying it, but not a bunch. I don't think he was all that familiar with Billy Robinson.
Oh, okay.
I think this might have been Billy's only time in Houston. I don't know for a fact. I gotta look at the results. I should have prepared a little bit more on it. But he was just...
You should have prepared more. I didn't even watch it.
Yeah, I know, right?
You're good.
But it just is a familiarity. Well, you clearly knew a lot more about Dory, but you just didn't know a whole lot about Robinson's background and stuff. So it felt like. But hey, then we get a Terry Funk promo, and this is a continuation off of the Harley Race match that's on NWA On Demand, and where Funk wants his rematch, and I hope we have this rematch on service at some point. That'd be epic. Because that first one was a incredible, or maybe the best NWA style title match I've ever seen. It's either one or two in my book, and I gushed a big time about that match. But this promo, it wasn't like dynamic Terry. This is more Terry being matter of the fact, explaining it. Well, what are your thoughts on the promo, Johnny?
It's so funny. It's so similar to the one he did with Gordon Sully that I thought they put a repeat out because it was basically the same promo, the same points getting across. Yeah. But he's talking. I don't intend to be Arnold Palmer. Trying to be like, I'm not the greatest past my prime thing, which was pretty cool. And he again is describing, he's like, when you put on the spinning toehold, the faces of the vulnerable, you know that it's the risk you take, it leaves your face vulnerable. And he's like, and he's saying that, he wouldn't do that if he didn't know how to do it or something. Basically, he's implying that, to be bloodied that bad from a punch, maybe that Race had a foreign object in his hand. What was in his hand? We have to ask that question. What was in his hand? And he then talks about getting the rematch because it's going to be it's a match that it can't be stopped for any other reason except pinfall or submission. And it's a dangerous match. So I was like, dude, that's, these guys now having something, granted, of course it's not going to be some ECW style brawl, but there'll be some cool, wacky shit in that match.
Yeah.
They'll get to do some brawling around ringside and stuff. So, I hope they uncover this.
Yeah, so do I. With that note, man, why don't we take a break and we'll go right into the main event.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Akira Puree, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back, and we're back, and we're looking at the main event. And man, this is the dynamic duo of Gino Hernandez, Tully Blanchard, versus Tiger Conway Jr., and Scott Casey. You know, the duo, we've seen enough footage, man, and they're definitely a tag team that you've got to talk about as one of the all-time great tag teams, wouldn't you, Johnny?
Dude, I was thinking the same thing last night when I was watching this. And I was, hey, look, it's Colorado, so figure it out, my state of mind. But I got to thinking about that sort of thing in wrestling that I don't really just think about or like arguing about anymore, you know, because I've just done it for too long on message boards and what have you. But this thought occurred to me because I was like, you know what? People really need to know how fucking awesome these are, because I read it on some forum. Someone was Death Valley Driver was talking about the service, Matt D, I think, and someone answered the dynamic duo. I didn't think that Chris Adams and Gino worked anywhere before. Is it the same thing? And I just answered, I was like, no, that was the original ones, Tully and Gino. And then that was the end of the conversation there. You know? And so they got me thinking, yes, you know, I was like, we need to spread the word on this one. They are, and at this point, they weren't calling them the dynamic duo yet, I don't think, in this match.
Right. That's possible. It's very possible.
I think this is like right, maybe right at the beginning, you know, because they got to a point of like wearing matching trunks and shit. And,
yeah.
And they weren't built as, but this, it doesn't really matter. So they're still in the genesis of this team in this match, and they're so goddamn good. And what we've seen, and what flashes in my mind again is that shot of them coming out in those fucking cars for an interview in the back of the Coliseum. And I'm like, match that sort of flair that I love and just how good. I mean, there's stuff to point out in this that is brilliant on their part. And I think they have to be in the conversation. From base, if you're going to base it on the available footage, They have to be in the conversation of one of the greatest teams ever.
Yeah, I'm enjoying them more than I enjoyed Tully and Arn.
Oh, me too.
It was funny. If they were wrestling now, there's no way they'd be heels. They'd be too fucking entertaining and they'd be baby faces.
I don't know.
I think they're just too entertaining. That's the one thing. Heels, if you're entertaining, you become a baby face. I mean, that's just...
Well, tell you what, the most current guys who are trying to straddle this are the Revival, because there's a lot of people who are cheering for them.
Yeah, exactly.
But nevertheless, I think, and you see it in this, we're talking about in this match, I think with any crowd, this team at this age, put them now, Tully Blanchard and Gino Hernandez would immediately figure out exactly how to piss off a crowd.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. They would just do it.
They'd adapt.
They would modernize their act to be heels. You're absolutely right.
It's so good.
I'm becoming a huge fan of the duo. I mean, I think they're just like a tier underneath like the Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, Fantastics group, honestly.
I'm about ready to put them in that group at this point.
Yeah, I just have my hair underneath it. Just a hair. I mean, honestly, I mean, I think they have the duo in my top five tag teams of all time right now. That's how good I have them. They're just so good. And that's what, I mean, Tully and Gene are both heat machines. And, you know, one could easily take the night off and the other one can carry it. And we've seen that a little bit at times. But both guys want to work hard, and they usually do work hard. And do it, man, every time we see them together, man, they seem to always deliver right off the bat of this match. And we get this odd camera start. It's like, what the fuck is this? And we see Tiger unloading on Tully, and now the camera is back to normal. It's all the first fall. It's two out of three falls. Both Tully and Gino are bumping and stooging big time, and I'm loving Tully selling his attempted headbutt on Tiger. It was fantastic. Finally, the numbers game catches up to Tiger, and he's facing peril. Both members of the duo are great. We're at work in the apron where they both can be shitheads and riling up the crowd while the other one's doing the work in the ring. Hot tag to the Cowboy. Casey standing tall and kicking ass. The double team just set up their advantage. They cut him off and work him over. He then tags the Tiger, and he hits his amazing flying headbutt to get the 1-2-3. Really strong first fall. Ball two, we get Conway again dominating early. Casey gets tagged in, and they kind of mesh as a pretty good tag team themselves here. Tiger presses the moment. The faces have all the momentum until Tiger misses Tully in the corner and posts himself. This leads to the duo stealing the fall. So far on these finishes, I love the finish of the first fall. Love the finish of the second fall because it shows that the baby faces could have easily won, but no, the heels steal it. I love that. I love that fall too. And then fall three, Chino's working over Tiger's hurt shoulder. Tully's in and punches Tiger right in the shoulder, so they're just wrecking his shoulder. Chino back in, he's stomping the shoulder, and the heat is getting hot. The crowd is going nuts, and they're again building it all off the work on the arm. Quick tags in, working over the shoulder, and the duo are maestros working over the shoulder. We get a hot tag, and Casey's bumping the duo again. Again, the duo use the numbers game and cut off the Cowboy, and they're focusing on Scott's back. Crowd getting restless. Ref distraction. They toss Casey over the top rope. Ref tries to get Conway out. Chino hits his falling elbow for the top for the win. 4-star match. Awesome, awesome match. Just great psychology. Again, another great. I love the finish because it was a distraction finish that allowed the heels to cheat to win. Excellent. And then we get the great promo afterwards, the in-ring promo from the duo. Bosch is like disgusted. Tully and Chino are on fire in this promo, and I think my favorite Paul Bosch is Bosch disgusted with Chino or the duo. I think, honestly, it's my favorite Paul Bosch. I think he doesn't show his disdain as much as he does when he's dealing with Chino and Tully, and he's just so great they're a great threesome together, honestly. It's like, it was almost like Lance Russell with Bill, when he's dealing with these guys, but different. Awesome match. You know what? Tiger Conway Jr. continues to impress me. He's always stepping up and having high-end matches. Really good babyface. Casey and what he's doing here in his role, I thought he was really good. These guys, I mean, definitely this was the duo's match, but man, great booking. And the babyfaces were up for the challenge and working with the duo. The duo, they worked up to the duo's level, and that's awesome. What do you think of this, man?
Yeah, I was just thinking after you were saying that. Like, so is this the best Scott Casey match you've ever seen?
Could be. It's up
there. I'm thinking it is.
I like this one. I also like this match with Mongolian Stomper. I thought this was better.
Yeah, dude, because when we get that hot tag, he come a flying in like an avenging goddamn bruising cowboy, and it looked great. He was so full of energy, and it was all being surrounded by greatness. Yep. You know, and because you got the duo, of course, and Tiger, you know, we already know Tiger's fucking good, dude. And they were clicking. Everything was clicking perfectly. And you got the duo, and they're both young here. They're so young, and they're at the height of their characters. I mean, you think, because as the whole being punks, you know, is their thing, and Tully was acting like a punk, you know, as a 40-year-old man. This is a young punk, and him and Gino are young punks, and they're both big mouths, and Gino's a little more flamboyant, you know, and Tully's a little more matter of fact, but they're on fire. I mean, they're like punk rock in the 70s, man. They're so good, and they're already so perfect. Okay. So you got Tully in the beginning. Tiger punches him, and he pokes his head out of Bosch, and he yells at him. He goes, oh, I'm the cheater? I'm the cheater. look at that. You call me the cheater, but he's the one that hit me first. It's great. Is he so mad at Paul Bosch about this whole thing? And then Tully does the – he's got Tiger in headlock, and he goes to punch him in the head. And the second he punches him in the head, the way he sells that is like he broke his hand on Tiger's hard head is
beautiful.
It's genius. It's instantaneous. You can't describe it. You got to see it to believe it, because it's one of the most realistic looking things that's also funny.
Yep.
Paul is also putting over Gino as tough, because apparently the week before, Gino had bled more than any man ever had bled before. And he's like, you know, you got to say what you will about him. He's tough, basically. So, oh, that's such great commentating.
Yep.
On your, you know, you may hate these guys, but they're tough. Then there's this great spot where Tully's on his knees near his corner, and Casey's like prowling over, like wanting to take a shot, but Tully can easily tag Gino, and he's got his hand out in the back, and they can tag, but they're not for some reason. And it's confusing Casey, because he's trying to look at both guys and not get ambushed when he goes to move in. So Tully moves out just a little, takes a kick in the gut, uses that to fall backwards, tag Gino behind his back. But now he's got Casey's attention. Gino then comes around the back and ambushes Casey. And it's the perfect plan. It's so
yep.
Fucking good. I was like, I've never seen that before. I've never seen it done that way. It's amazing. That's what I was thinking. We need to spread the word. Like I was talking before. And then Paul's got to do the fucking birthdays in the middle of this action. I'm like, what the fuck? What are you doing? But he, because he had to talk about Mrs. Clark, who's 77 years old, and Julius, who's 91. So I get it. You know, I've got to get, I have to do it now, or else maybe there won't be a next time. So he did it. And then he says, following this, you know, have you ever seen a match from Japan? Well, yeah, well, next. Like, he's hyping the next thing during this. He gets off the great line, he who hesitates gets walloped in the belly. I was like, oh, that sounds like it was on a fortune cookie. Then Gino takes that bump to the floor that is suicidal. It just amazing. The bad guys win. It's the way they do it. It's seamless, but I love his reverse elbow off the top rope. It's such a neat, different thing that nobody did. And then when they're yelling with Paul, and doing the promo, Tiger's coming over and complaining about the cheating until he goes, look at him crying. Look at him crying. Typical. Oh, he can't accept that he lost. Typical. Look, he's a crybaby. That's all you got around here. It's just a bunch of crybaby milksops. And Paul's like, milksops. And they walk away, and it's tremendous.
Right.
This is, oh, man, this was so much fun. So much fun seeing these guys all young and just the energy in this is palpable. It's so good.
Yeah, man. They just work the crowd like Meisters, too. I mean, they know when to pick their spots. They're so good at cheating. I mean, they're so infectious. And you're like, every time I see these guys, I'm like, okay, what type of cheap shot are they going to pull? How are they going to do it? I'm curious, because they're not routine-y. That's the thing that also makes them interesting. Yeah. It's like something like, you know, everyone usually falls into routine, but so far with these guys, yeah, some it's a little, but for the most part, everything seems fresh and new with their matches.
It's like I said, that whole little sequence that I described. I'm like,
yeah.
I've never seen it done that way. These guys,
yep.
And these guys are full of that. These guys did this here. Nobody else saw it, and then they never tagged again. They were like that band who had one album,
yeah.
And people that go, oh, we can't still figure out how they did that. You know?
You're absolutely right. It's just incredible. It's absolutely, yeah, you're absolutely right. These guys, people have not watched enough Dynamic Duo, need to check it out. I mean, yeah, there's some, you know, from TV at Southwest Championship Wrestling, but it's different than actually watching people work in the arena setting. It's totally different. And, I mean, bottom line, TV back then wasn't about great matches on television. It was about getting people to come out here to the arena and sell tickets. It was more angle and promo. It was way more angle and promo driven.
Yet Paul would show these matches on his television.
This is true. Very true. Very true, man. Wow.
But people didn't care. They didn't want to wait a week or even a day.
Come and pay. Man, with that said, we can close it up. But remember, NWAOnDemand.com, new website. They're actually, if you guys want to go out there and check it out, they're showing a Jack Briscoe versus Spoiler match for free. You just need a sign. Just go in there and click it, and it starts playing for you. See what the service is about. It's a really good match. There's not that much Jack Briscoe footage available in the world. And here, he's giving you a match for free. So check it out. Get to see two guys who are damn good wrestlers in Jack Briscoe and the Spoiler. John, you got anything you got to plug, man?
No. They should let us pick that match for that gimmick on the website. Our pick of the week.
With that said, follow me at Titans O Wrestling on Twitter. Remember, you know, I sing the old school blues. I miss it. I love it. That's my jam. So many different wrestling out there. Find your jam and enjoy what you're watching, man. That's the key to wrestling. And y'all, with that said, have a great week.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden, king of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night, I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes, the car.